Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Art of Tracking radio show. Tracking is still alive and well. Join us as we interview master trackers from around the world. We'll hear their stories, their secrets. So tune in and enjoy all you hear. Welcome.
Welcome to the Art of Tracking Radio. Today we're talking with Tristan Gooley, the author of The Natural Explorer, The Natural Navigator, and The Lost Art of Reading Nature's Signs. He has both flown and sailed solo across the Atlantic. He also runs a natural navigation school. We're really excited to have Tristan Gooley on to talk about how we can become natural navigators.
Well, thanks for coming on the show, Tristan. I really enjoy your books that you have here.
Thanks very much. Cheers for having me.
And one of the things I really like about your books is it's kind of like being a nature detective, and you're looking for the connections between things and how those connections can tell us about the environment.
Yeah, that my view is absolutely everything is a clue to something else, which is different from saying that I know what that clue is. But that's the fun for me. When we all start out as kids and then when we're older, it can be a bit daunting. There's such a richness out there. There's a temptation to sort of, you know, throw in the towel before you've even got going. And so my work is a lot about, you know, allowing people to accelerate along the path I followed a bit faster than I did. So, you know, knowing that the sun is due south in the middle of the day doesn't freak too many people out. But knowing exactly what direction it is at sunrise, that's the next level. And then the influence that has on the plants is a level beyond that.
Yeah, I was reading in your book that, many of your books actually, that trees are not symmetrical, that the sun influences which side appears larger.
That's absolutely right. And this is a great example of two very simple things bolted together create something that's perhaps a bit richer and more interesting. So having mentioned the sun is due south in the middle of the day, that's when it gives us most of its light and energy. All plants need sunlight. It's their breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And so it would be a bit odd if they're symmetrical. The analogy I sometimes give is if you put a hungry dog in a room and there's food on one side of the room, we know which way the dog's going to go. And actually plants are doing this through a mechanism known as phototropism, photo-light tropism growth. Plants are clever because clever's an interesting choice of word there, but I think everybody knows what I mean. They can't, you know, uproot and move around to make their situation better. So they've evolved to have this incredibly ingenious autonomous reaction system. So everything that changes in their world, light levels, moisture, wind, will make a plant grow differently to give itself the best possible chance. So it'll grow more abundantly and bigger on the south side. But if the winds are strong, it will grow shorter and stouter overall. So Every aspect of a tree's shape and size is the tree trying to react to its environment. And as a natural navigator and a nature enthusiast, and a nature detective, as you put it, you know, I'm coming at it the other way. Instead of saying, I know what the environment is, therefore I know what to expect in this tree, which is how we learn, you turn that on its head. You say, this tree is bigger on this side and it's short and squat and the roots are doing this. So I know that the sunlight has been coming from this direction, therefore I know that is south, and I know that the prevailing winds are, let's say, from the southwest. So the tree's telling me, you know, it's making a compass for me.
And then, so you could take that, once you learn that from a couple trees in your area, as you navigate around the environment, you look for that pattern then in other trees?
Absolutely, and pattern's a great word. I spend every waking moment I can outdoors looking for two things, broadly speaking, patterns and asymmetries. So almost nothing in nature is identical on both sides. Everything's asymmetrical. And when we notice that two sides of everything in nature, you know, it doesn't matter, more insects on one side of a tree perhaps, or leaves being smaller. Leaves on the south side of a tree tend to be smaller than leaves on the north side, again related to light. So once we notice that asymmetry or any pattern, the most important thing I can encourage anybody to do is just ask the question, why? And it doesn't actually matter if we don't come up with the answer, because just the process of asking the question nudges us all to take a deeper interest. And actually, we quite often spot two or three things we wouldn't otherwise. So it's something I've noticed on my courses. I quite often spot a nice example, and I pause and I point it out to people, and I say, now everyone, can you tell me why, you know, we're seeing more wildflowers in this spot and not so many in the other spot? And the funny thing is, just the action of me pausing and pointing it out means I then go and spot two or three more things. So noting something and questioning it, you don't always get the answer to the question. I don't always get the answer to the question, but you do start noticing more things. That's for certain.
Now, you traveled around the world learning this stuff, and you often went to indigenous people. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to do more because it's such good fun. But generally speaking, the way I work is I'm inquisitive and I'm curious, but I'm not an adventurer for adventure's sake. And what I mean is, if the answer is, you know, in a book on my table, or if it's, you know, in Wikipedia or somewhere else, if I can get the answer I want, I've got it. I won't then say, oh, well, I've got the answer. That's an excuse to jump on a plane and go and walk across a desert. But quite often the information I want is out there, not written down anywhere, and certainly not on the internet. So, you know, the way the indigenous people in Borneo, the Dayak tribes, in particular the Penan Dayak, the way they read the landscape, it's been alluded to in literature for perhaps 100 or more years, but it's never really been studied. So there was no book on the table. There was nothing on the internet to help me. So I then have to go and, you know, work my way into the heart of Borneo to find that information. So it's you know, for me, the world is a library. You know, if it's an easy, convenient library, then great. If it takes a bit more sweat and losing blood to leeches, so be it.
Yeah. Now, you were also talking about the plants earlier and how they grow towards the light. But one of the things I read in your book that I did not know, but it makes total sense now that I've read it in your book, was that ivy is kind of the opposite of growing towards the sun.
Yeah, ivy is one of my favorite plants because it teased me for several years. Because again, going back to the way I look at the world, I'm looking for these patterns, I'm looking for these asymmetries. And ivy, every time I thought I had a consistent pattern, I'd go, great. And then the next day I'd go out and it would do something different. And with hindsight, I should have actually done a bit of digging around in the academic texts earlier than I did. But long story cut short, ivy was teasing me because it actually changes. It has two main stages of life. When it's young, it's a climbing plant, so it wants to cling on to things. You know, historically, it would always have been trees and other plants, but more recently, it might be walls and structures. But whatever it's clinging on to, it doesn't have a brain. Its only way of working out where something might be worth growing towards when it's young is to go towards darkness. So a tree will typically be darker than open ground. So what it does, it grows towards darkness, then it grows up the tree. And when it's approximately 10 years old, there's no fixed marker. It's a combination of age and time and light and all these things. It will actually mature and then it becomes a much more typical plant. It starts growing much more towards the light. So in navigational terms, it has a tendency to grow towards the north for the first 10 years of its life and then towards the south after that. And the joyous thing is, it changes physically in a very obvious way. If you see an ivy leaf with more than one lobe, it's immature, and that part of the ivy will be growing away from the light. And if it's only got one point, it will be growing much more towards the light. All these things take a bit of practice, but once you're familiar with them, they actually start to leap out at you.
And where is your school at? And tell me a little bit about your school. It sounds like you run courses and stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty much wherever I lay my hat, in the sense that I go where the interest is. I run courses at the Royal Geographical Society in London sometimes, and I run a lot close to where I live in a place called West Sussex, near a small city called Chichester in the south of England. And that's partly because so much of my working day is researching and writing, researching both indoors and outdoors. And then writing. And the courses, I used to teach full time, Now the courses are much more about helping me work out what is the good stuff, because something that excites me may not excite lots of other people. So every day I'm learning something, and the courses now really help me gauge, you know, what has broad appeal. So I never realized when I started writing how fascinating people would find puddles. You know, you get more puddles on the south side of a track that runs east-west because the sun generally struggles to get there. And when I wrote that paragraph in 2010, I think it was, it was a paragraph. I thought it's worth putting in. And people just went crazy for it. What? You can find your way using puddles? And so now, instead of me guessing, courses help me because I can put some new stuff out there to a group. It doesn't matter if it's four people or 40. And I'm watching the reactions. And if everybody's faces light up, then that material will be in a book a year later, most likely.
Yeah, I'm one of those people that's faces lit up. That was in The Natural Navigator, I believe, what you're talking about there, the puddles with the diagram and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I've actually just done quite a lot more work with puddles and included some of it in a book that'll be coming out in both the UK and the States in 2016 called How to Read Water. It's taking the idea that something that our eyes and our brain sort of write off as maybe at best pretty. You know, if we look across the patch of water and it doesn't matter if it's a puddle or the, you know, the Great Pacific Ocean, our brains are busy and they're quite often, you know, filtering and prioritizing, and they're saying, all this information you're feeding me, I don't need that. What I need to think about is that email I have to do, that deadline, that meeting. And so a lot of my work, and in this book in particular, is saying, wait a minute, there's all these incredible patterns and signs and clues out there if we want to have a look and have a bit of fun deciphering them.
Yeah. One last question while I got you on the phone here is I'm wondering, how have your perceptions or connections to nature differed on this journey of all this stuff you're learning?
Well, the biggest shift for me has been both a philosophical and practical one, in the sense that my initial interest in natural navigation was practical. I was doing lots and lots of journeys, and I thought, yeah, I think the first time anybody finds, you know, a method using the Big Dipper to find the North Star, for example, and it works, they get quite excited. And it actually doesn't matter if you're 8 years old or 88 years old, you get the same excitement, a kind of thrill. And then that can develop into a series of techniques, and it starts to feel like you're collecting tricks. So you're like, oh, wow. So I've got the North Star, I've got the sun in the middle of the day. Oh, and now there are these tree ones. I mean, I've written about 19 different ways to navigate using trees. So we collect all of those. And actually, there comes a tipping point. And for me, it's been gradual, but a very sort of strong one, where now actually the fascination in natural navigation is not about a trick for finding north using snow or something like that. It's actually in appreciating that every single thing outdoors is part of the richest map that we will ever look at. So it starts with very simple ideas. Certain trees like beech trees like dry soil, other trees like alders and willows like wet. So, okay, so that's a simple map. Those trees are saying it's dry there. Those trees are saying it's wet there. And then we start to realize that every single plant, every single animal, every cloud is giving us information in the same way that we're used to taking that information from a map. Doesn't matter if it's a paper map or a map on an iPhone or whatever. You know, every single, you know, bird has just flown past my window. You know, if I knew everything I possibly could, that bird is trying to tell me something. It's trying to tell me something about what the wind is doing, what the ground is like out there, what the temperature is, all of these things together. And we don't have to, it's not a memory exercise. We don't have to try and, you know, grab hold of all these things. But one thing we can all do, and one thing I really enjoy pushing for, is this idea to not overlook the richest map and the most beautiful map in the world. That's really the one thing that's changed over the last 20 years for me.
That's amazing. And I highly recommend all of us trackers out there, get Tristan Gooley's books. These are really important for us on our journey as trackers, I think. And I want to thank you for taking the time to share your stuff with us here.
Thanks very much, Garth. It's been great chatting to you, and happy navigating.
Yeah, thank you. You too.